From the land of back-to-back World War champs, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The only Medicare podcast that actually pronounces the word Medicare properly. A Southerner born and bred but has never been noodling, it's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, the one podcast for all Medicare participants to listen to before they enroll in Medicare, or even after. I think there are probably things you can learn after you've enrolled in Medicare. You might be scratching your head going, what the heck is this all about? Well, we'll try to answer some of those questions for you as time goes by. This is Doug Jones. As Drew McMillan, our announcer, just said, I am your Medicare expert. Drew is my Canadian nephew, and we are inextricably tied by genetics and by family devotion. He is in Canada, though, where they just don't want to have any Americans show up there. They'll turn him away or lock him up for 2 weeks. And we are in the United States, which was formerly free, but living under threats that the blue states are going to once again impose their will, their unfounded, stark, raving terror on the citizens. Ah, but I digress. This is not about politics. This is about Medicare, and we should be enjoying ourselves. So one thing I do to enjoy myself is I like to listen to our 30-second radio spot that Randy and I cooked up a year or so ago that tells you exactly why we're here in a really short, succinct form. So Randy, would you play that, please?
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
Thank you very much. Once again, very short, succinct explanation of why we're here. I wrote a book a few years ago, then I wrote a sequel to it the following year, then I wrote another one the following year, and now we're on book number four. It's called Medicare for the Lazy Man, and it's got a red 2021 on the cover. So if you go to Barnes & Noble or most likely Amazon and search Medicare for the Lazy Man, you will find that book in paperback format for a pretty reasonable price, in Kindle or ebook format, and in Audible format, where you can listen to me talk about Medicare for maybe the rest of your life if you want to just start it over and play it over and over and over again. Rarely would anybody want to do that, but if the mood strikes, that's certainly an alternative activity for you. Anyway, I am here with my friend and spiritual advisor, Randy Carson, who handles the knobs and the slides on the other side of the screen. Hello, Randy. How are things today?
I'm good.
He's staring.
You woke me up. Doggone it.
I know. That happens periodically, but you don't have your open eyeballs drawn onto your glasses lenses.
Oh, no, I wasn't asleep. I was just pretending.
Okay, well, there you go.
I'm doing really good. How can I argue? I'm living in Arizona.
Yeah, it's got to be beautiful out there, if a little warm.
Well, it's 97 today. So for those of you who don't live in Arizona, now this isn't going to surprise Doug a bit, but 97 is a good day. 97 is a nice, I was going to say spring day, but you know, it's nice.
And when the sun goes down, that temperature drops and makes it really, really comfortable and pleasant.
Yes, it does.
A wonderful place to live. Occasionally it gets too hot. And surprisingly enough, in the wintertime, especially, occasionally it gets too cold. And we've had really cold, freezing nights all the way into March in the past.
Oh, I know. I've got a lot of family back in the Midwest, as you know. And I'm constantly whining when I talk to them about, oh my God, I had to put a sweater and a jacket on today. And they'll go, well, how cold is it? And I'll go, 63.
Yeah. Yep, that's the way it goes. So you get acclimated to wherever you are, and then all of a sudden any change from that becomes unpleasant. Well, listen, we got some Medicare business to attend to today, and I've got a thick sheaf of papers to get through. So why don't we get after it?
Let's get her done.
Get her done, get after it. And what we're going to start with is a reference to our buddy Steve, who has a history of providing content for the podcast because he is Mr. Curiosity. He will eventually come up with a question that requires that I do all kinds of research and everything to answer appropriately. And then while I'm doing that, he's working on another question. And it has been an interesting experience having Steve pelt me with questions, but it has been excellent for creating content for the podcast. And I've learned a whole bunch of stuff too, because sometimes the questions he asks result in me having to do research that teaches me things as well. And the most recent adventure Steve has had involves IRMA. That's IRMAA, which is the success penalty. This is the income-related monthly adjustment amount, IRMAA, that the Medicare people will tack on to the price of your Part B of Medicare, as well as your drug plan, if you have earnings that exceed their rather arbitrary limits. In other words, if you're successful financially, they demand that you pay more of the cost of this welfare program that we like to call Medicare. So Steve has been asking me a million questions about IRMA, and I have actually been kind of holding him at arm's length because I thought maybe I could learn something from his experiences. So his last report to me was a couple of days ago. This was actually June 29th, so it was like 5 days ago. And he said, well, I haven't heard back about my form SSA-44. Now, SSA stands for Social Security Administration. They're the people that administer Medicare. So his form SSA-44, he had filed with the Social Security Administration. They had not answered him. He was having trouble finding somebody willing to take responsibility for it. And he asked to speak with a supervisor. He got the supervisor's name and his extension, his telephone number, and was told that he would probably have to leave a voicemail and that the supervisor would call him back. So he left a voicemail, hasn't called him yet. So then he checked the website of his U.S. congresswoman, because Steve lives in Texas, and he was going to trot out the big guns and get some professional help. Her site, the congresswoman's site, said they could help with dealing with government agencies. So he called up the congresswoman's office and asked what they needed. They said if they didn't hear anything, or if Steve didn't hear anything back from them, and where to email it. Okay, so he just asked for a list of the documents that they would find helpful in helping Steve get this process taken care of. And he said, if I don't hear anything in 5 or 4 days, I'm gonna call my congresswoman and ask for help officially. So then on the next day, he said, it finally came through. I got a letter today saying I don't have to pay IRMA, the penalty. And he said, that seems like double taxation to me, and it should be illegal. I'm surprised that there haven't been some court cases about it, or maybe there have been. And I said to Steve, congratulations, Steve. Victory is yours after all this messing around. I said, unfortunately, the U.S. tax system is rife with examples of double taxation and reverse discrimination against the most productive of us. I'm very glad you beat the system. Then Steve said, I don't think I beat the system. I just held my own for a change. But anyway, so Steve did have, through persistence and kind of an intelligent pursuit of the process by which one appeals an IRMA fine or penalty, he did succeed. And so then doing a little research, I found a company named Lawrence Financial Planning, and they have an article that they wrote, I don't know when exactly, But the title of the article is SSA-44, a step-by-step guide. And that's the form that Steve used in order to convince people to, or convince the Medicare people that he did not deserve to have an IRMA penalty assessed against him. And I've told other people, and I've sent the blank SSA 44 with its instructions to others who ask about how to get it out of IRMA. And this is the first time I've heard somebody actually beating the system completely. And so I thought I'd read this article about the step-by-step guide to SSA 44. So the introduction is, have you gotten an IRMA determination letter? Remember, IRMA is I-R-M-A-A, which is income replacement monthly, or income monthly adjustment amount. It's the fine that they apply to successful people that earn too much money, in their view. So if you have received a notification you're going to have to pay IRMA, you're probably wondering how to reduce or avoid the surcharges. If you have recently experienced a life-changing event, you may be able to use form SSA-44, also noted as, known as Medicare Income-Related Monthly Adjustment Amount Life-Changing Event, to lower or eliminate your IRMA. So the guy says, before we go on, it's important to note that virtually all of this information is available on the SSA website, and most of it is actually on the SSA 44 form. In other words, it comes with like one page you have to fill out and 10 pages of instructions that you have to plow through in order to understand how to use it. So it says, if there is a couple, if two spouses on Medicare get hit with an IRMA penalty, you'll probably each receive an IRMA determination letter. If that's the case, then you'll need to follow this procedure for each spouse. And this happens when spouses are filing jointly and their joint return exceeds the income floor for the imposition of IRMA. So how the SSA 44 works. IRMA is an increase in Medicare premiums based on income. They are sent an initial determination notice, and these notices are usually sent in advance of the following year. For example, 2020's IRMA letters were sent towards the end of 2019. They try to give you some notice, I guess, that you're going to get hit with an IRMA penalty. And those determinations were mostly based on 2018 tax returns. So the same thing would apply now. It's right in the middle of 2021, and people who got IRMA letters early this year, they would be based on the 2019 tax returns 2 years ago. So a lot could have changed in your life between 2018 and 2020 that might have lowered your income. For example, many people retire and their income goes down. In recognition of this, SSA defines special events that may have impacted your income as life-changing events. So virtually everything you need to successfully complete the SSA 44 is found on that form itself. However, it's worth pointing out that some of the useful things you can find on the form, the IRMA table, so you can find out the justification for the penalty, and then instructions. It's important to note that the SSA 44 not only contains details of each step, but clear instructions starting on page 5 of this form. God, how many pages can there be? When you might consider using the SSA 44, if a life-changing event has impacted your income, then you would use the form to request a reconsideration of new facts for a new IRMA determination. We wrote an article. If you want more information on life-changing events, well, I can't give you a hyperlink through the podcast. But anyway, you can decide for yourself if you should go forward with the SSA 44. I have an idea by reading the instructions attached to the form. Submitting an SSA 44 is not an appeal. It's actually much simpler. That form asks the Social Security Administration to consider new income-related facts as if they were part of the initial determination. How to fill out the form. There are 5 steps to filling out the form. Step 1, The type of life-changing event. Okay, perk up, everybody. The life-changing event is what you're trying to convince them that you're going to have. This is the type of life-changing event that happened in your life and when it occurred. The 8 types of life-changing events that the Social Security Administration will consider in their IRMA determination are: 1, marriage. You entered into a legal marriage. 2, divorce or annulment. Your legal marriage ended and you will not file a joint return for that year. 3, death of your spouse. And they elucidate that or add a little explanation. Death of your spouse is explained by saying your spouse died. Okay. Work stoppage. You or your spouse stopped working.
Your death of your spouse. Your spouse died.
Well, how about work stoppage? It's the same thing. You or your spouse stopped working. So when you see work stoppage, I guess they felt the need to explain it further in case you didn't understand.
Oh, my God. I'm going to let you move on, but I just had to let you know that when your spouse dies, they don't need to explain it.
I agree, but and work reduction, the same kind of thing. They're explaining that you or your spouse might have had reduced work hours. I don't know how much the government paid for that explanation, but it's a little wasted. Work reduction, loss of income producing property, loss of personal or pension income, and employer settlement payment. So you might have sued your employer and had some sort of settlement, or there might have been a bankruptcy. They use as an example here. So anyway, the form in step 1 asks what type of life-changing event occurred and when it happened. This step also asks for the date that the event took place, because it must be in the same tax year or an earlier tax year than the one you ask the SSA to consider. For example, if your 2020 IRMA was calculated using 2018 tax information, but you got married in 2019, then you could use the 2019 information instead. Now, here's step 2 out of the 5 steps. Reduction in income. This is where you fill in the modified adjusted gross income for the tax year that was evaluated. So that would be 2018 in this example. It's the adjusted gross income, line 7 of form 1040. Tax exempt interest, line 2A of 1040. And that would be like municipal bond interest. And then let's see, it asks for your tax information filing status, and you simply fill all this information out as well as the tax filing status for that year. Be sure that you simply report what was already reported on your tax return. Don't change anything here. That'll be in step 3. In step 3, they deal with the modified adjusted gross income. This is where you estimate your income to be based upon your life-changing event. This step has 3 parts. Number 1, will your MAGI, modified adjusted gross income, be lower next year than this year, than the year in step 2? If the answer is yes, then you'll complete the rest of step 3. If the answer is no, you'll skip to step 4. Note, it doesn't always have to go down. For example, if you got married but your income didn't change, then you would answer no and move to step 4. So number 2, fill in the tax year estimated AGI, adjusted gross income, and the estimated tax exempt interest. If you work with a financial advisor or tax professional, they can run a tax projection for you based upon your life-changing event. Okay, we're deep in the weeds now, ladies and gentlemen. This is where you've got to go to the internet, download your own copy of SSA 44. Randy's laughing it up in there, but fortunately I have a mute button and I've muted him, so he's not interrupting our deep dive into the SSA 44. Anyway, then something about your expected tax filing status. If your tax filing status hasn't changed, this should be straightforward. Marriage, divorce, deceased spouse. IRS has a page where you can determine your filing status. What is my filing status? It takes 5 to 10 minutes to walk through. So we're getting close to wrapping this up. Step 3 asks for your expected modified adjusted gross income for the year following the year of your life-changing event. Okay, so we finished that up. Step four, documentation. In this step, you'll collect the required documents or certified copies of those documents, depending on your life-changing event. You can find this list on page 8 of the SSA 44. Hint, if you only have one copy of the document, you may want to get a copy so that you can keep the original. In the case of a work stoppage or reduction, you simply need to sign a statement under penalty of perjury that you've partially completed or completely stopped working, or that you took a job with less compensation. While the SSA returns all submitted documents, you should keep a copy for your own records. And so step 5, signature. Wow, that's got to be the shortest step in the whole batch. You'll sign the document under penalty of perjury. In other words, you will be held accountable for efforts to defraud the government. So this form should only be completed if you are sincere. So be reflective. Think about things before you decide whether to sign or not. If you're willing to risk a stretch in Leavenworth, then I'd say go ahead and sign that sucker and shoot it off to the SSA. You'll also want to provide a copy for your tax return, which will help speed up the determination, or a copy of your tax return, which will help speed up the determination process. So, how to submit the SSA 44 for consideration. You can call your local Social Security office for instructions on how to submit the SSA 44 and supporting documentation. To find the closest Social Security office, go to Social Security Office Locator and type in your zip code. Never heard of that before, Social Security Office Locator. During the panic, the COVID-19 panic, Social Security offices are closed to the public, but still serving via remote means. I'm not sure that's true anymore for all of them. This thing is a year old. By calling the local office, you'll receive guidance on the best way to send in your SSA-44. And that's true of any documentation you have to send to those people regarding your enrollment in Medicare. If you call the local office, you'll get good advice about how best they want to have you submit the documents. It used to be you had to go there and hand them stuff, but you don't have to anymore. Sometimes dealing with the government can be a daunting and frustrating task. This is especially true when you're facing an IRMA bill you don't believe you deserve. So anyway, that was a lot of poop, but I would suggest that everybody go get their own SSA 44 and enjoy the multi-page instructions that allow you to hopefully appeal and successfully overturn an IRMA determination that they've hit you with. What do you think, Randy? Should we go out and file forms?
I was just thinking, Doug, you know, you mentioned early on in this discussion that one of the things that should trigger this and probably does trigger it is a life-changing event.
Yes, it does.
And you know what my life-changing event was?
Let's see. I know your wife didn't die. I don't know that your work hours have been reduced. I'm going back to the list of things. You had to get a Guinness. You had to go get a Guinness out of the icebox.
Well, there was that part. But the other part was I saw by the mail when it came in the IRMA penalty letter. That was my life-changing event.
Oh, my God.
What have I done? Oh, yeah.
That's going to change your life.
That was a bad day in Cave Creek, I'll tell you.
Yeah, the only thing I can say is the IRMA penalty is more irritating than it is frightening, because that penalty, I mean, if the penalty is 1 cent a year, it's going to irritate the heck out of me. But it is the limit on the upper IRMA penalties is not outrageous. It's not thousands of dollars a month or anything else, but it's unfair in America for some people to have to pay more than others, in my opinion. And it is not a horribly outrageous dollar amount if they hit you with an IRMA penalty. It's more just a real pain and an irritation. So don't be afraid of it, but be ready to fight it. And, you know, I would say keep punching at them until you succeed or until they tell you to go away and you're never going to win.
I wonder if their track record for approving requests for a reduction of IRMA penalties or whatever they call it, I wonder if that follows the same path as when people, you know, respond to the Medicare. What is that Medicare program? Not the supplements, but the Medicare Advantage. Yes.
Disadvantage.
The Medicare Disadvantage Plan has a track record of after you file a what do they call it? A claim,
a grievance, an appeal.
Yeah. So yeah. 99 point, I'm being a little facetious, but a very high percentage of Medicare Advantage appeals are approved. Oh, isn't that just really interesting?
Yeah, they deny services. And then the few people that go back and appeal always get approved, was what we learned from articles about that process. And that's because most people will never ask again. They'll just either pay for it out of their pocket or skip the treatment that they really think they need. So you're absolutely right.
I'm thinking Irma might go the same path. Do you think so?
It might be. I don't know how much individual latitude there is. Take two government clerks in, let's say, Cincinnati, and two people in Cincinnati got slapped with Irma notifications. So they're each dealing with one of these clerks. Does the clerk that's having a bad day and that's in a kind of a snippy mood, does that result in a less advantageous result for that taxpayer? Or is there a cut and dried process that we're not privy to? I just don't know.
I think there is a cut and dried process. I think it has to do with a quarter.
Okay, and whether it lands on its edge or not.
Heads or tails, and if it lands on its edge, I don't know what happens then. Probably it gets your Irma penalty is reduced or eliminated if it lands on its edge.
Wouldn't it be nice to have a recording microphone in the IRS or the Social Security Administration break room where all the clerks go to, swill Diet Pepsi and tell their stories about the dopey taxpayers they have to deal with.
Hey, so, Bill, did you see this one? Oh my gosh, you should see this. He wants to reduce his Irma penalty.
I can't wait to mail out his declination letter.
Yes, absolutely. So anyway, I thought that was very interesting. I still, at some level, shake my head because, this guy, this family, this woman, they did very well throughout their career. Let's really deal in fits now.
Yeah, let's stick it to them. Let's try to grab as much of that back as we can because all money belongs to the government. That's their attitude.
That's absolutely.
All money belongs to the government.
I can't get my head around it, but we need to sign off because our time is up. The steam is gone. The water's gone. The fuel's gone. We are coming in on a wing and a prayer. Basically, we've got a 737 glider going here.
Well, if you survive the impact, then go to Amazon and buy Medicare for the Lazy Man, the 2021 version. And congrats to Steve for successfully beating the federal government who is trying to grab more of his money than they deserve to have.
Yes, absolutely. I applaud you, Steve, because you did go the mile. And you were rewarded with a successful conclusion. A lot of people wouldn't do that, but I do congratulate you for doing that. So anyway, you have just spent, now we talked about buying the book. We got to go to Amazon, buy the book. We got to go to Amazon and buy the audiobook. We got to go to Amazon and buy a lot of different things, but don't forget to go. That's the important part.
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned that. So thank you for joining us today. We always enjoy having you with us, and we'll look forward to having you join us next time.
Absolutely. You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma, and also the author of Medicare for the Lazy Man. Easiest and what guide ever?
Simplest and easiest.
I can never remember the punchline. Simplest and easiest guide ever.
Well, if you type in Medicare for the Lazy Man, you're going to be halfway there.
You are. So thanks, everybody.